flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Luke played some audio from Lucas Raymond. I want to talk a little bit about him. 9 o'clock hour rolls around. We'll get to the Pistons trade deadline. What should they do? Buy, sell, or hold? They played well enough. We get to have that conversation. We'll do it at 9:35. Plus some quotes from Malik Beasley, who I think is at the center of that question. John, Lucas Raymond, he's on a tear right now. And I wonder, is he the quietest star we have in Detroit? Like, nobody talks about what Lucas Raymond's putting together right now.
Well, at the end of last year, we talked about the rising star that he is, or at that time was, what our expectations were for him this year. And I think he is surpassing some of those expectations. I think we all thought that he was going to be eventually the leader of this team in regards to production.
Yeah, and the question was, what's Yzerman going to do? How's he going to find a star? They never won the lottery. He never had a number one or a number two pick. The highest draft pick Yzerman did have was Lucas Raymond. Mm-hmm. His only top five pick was Lucas Raymond. So there's a lot riding on him panning out. And safe to say, he's delivering. Right now, after his four-point night on Monday, he's 13th in the NHL in scoring. He's a top 10 winger by points. 23 points in the 16 games since the coaching change. Only David Pastrnak has been better since the holiday. I keep reminding people he's 22 years old.
Right.
He's pacing for a 90-point season, and if he plays the way he has since the coaching change, he has an outside shot to have a 100-point season, which hasn't happened for the Wings since the mid-90s.
And I think you mentioned there, I think the reason he is under the radar and is somewhat being overlooked, if you're not, you know, of the hockey elite and you don't watch every single moment of the Wings, is the coaching change. That's been the big story. The big story originally was Derek Lalonde and them not living up to very minimal expectations. Coaching change happens right at the holidays, and now all of a sudden they are on a bit of a tear as a team. That's what the conversation has been, and it's not been about the nuts and bolts. We've talked a little bit about it in regards to the power play and the 5-on-5 and scoring chances and shots and all this different, all the different minutiae of it, but we haven't talked about the star that is that Lucas Raymond is becoming.
I was going to say, I mean, he is a star with a chance to be a superstar, and in the city, remember 4 or 5 years ago, we're looking around going, we don't have anybody.
Right.
Now it's starting to get crowded because you've got Tarek Skubal, Cy Young winner. You have Penei Sewell, All-Pro multiple times over. St. Brown, the same deal. You have Cade, who's stealing a lot of spotlight, deservedly so, in the NBA. What Raymond's doing is not that different than what Cade's doing. It's just hard to compare apples and oranges, but he's on the ascent. They're both 22 years old. Lucas Raymond, it's happening, guys.
Is he going to be an all-star?
I would say, yeah, he should be.
So, I mean, so we're having those conversations with Cade, and I believe we'll find for Cade out tomorrow night. I don't know when it's going to be announced for the NHL, but I am curious as to some of it is, okay, in basketball and football, everybody picks their all-stars a different way, and you're kind of curious as to how this all, you know, comes together, whether it's fan voting, how much of it's players, how much of it is the front office, and has he been overshadowed enough to not get a share of one of those, you know, pots of votes?
Yeah, I think he has flown under the radar. He's only 22. He'll be 23 years old in March. But Lucas Raymond, he's becoming the star that everybody thought Yzerman was going to have to build without, right? This was going to have to be done without winning the lottery. That year, they were the worst team in the sport. They fell to four. They didn't get Lafreniere, who went to the Rangers. You know who the best player in that draft has been? Lucas Raymond.
Yeah.
So it did work out in that way, and he is the guy that allows them to get to that next level. He was putting a lot on his shoulders last year down the stretch. I remember we were highlighting him a lot. We come in on those Monday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday in the morning and go, wow, look what Raymond did. He's even better now than he was a year ago.
Well, last year, first year of really reaching that level of expectation and production. And it's kind of a double-headed conversation where you're talking about Lucas Raymond and how he is leading the team and how he is, you know, in terms of points and production, but it was all about where did DeBrincat go? Where did Kane go? And you wanted those guys to be a bigger part of the conversation. Now it is simply Lucas Raymond. How high can he fly and how far can he take the wings with him?
And I think it's a good time to bring it up too, because we're a month into Todd McClellan and McClellan is kind of the pivot point for when the season turned around. And the question is, okay, how long does that go, right? How far can a coach rah-rah his team? Well, this is where the next level is. Are the players taking steps? Because McClellan can't snap his fingers, wave a magic wand, and turn this team into a playoff team. But if he unlocked Lucas Raymond to the next level, that's something that sustains. That's something that plays in February and March and April. And it might not just be Raymond. I mean, he's put two defensemen who are essentially rookies together in Johansson and Edvinson. I'm not telling you they're going to be stars, but again, if he gets more out of these guys, if he paves the path for these guys to shine, then it becomes more than just a coach came in and knocked some heads together and said, let's play effing hockey. No, they actually took a step as players. They're actually fulfilling what they thought they were capable of.
So are you feeding into holding off the conversation about Steve Yzerman?
Oh, yeah. I think that's absolutely. We're not firing this guy.
Well, not that. I mean, let's go back a month.
Did he do enough in the offseason?
Right. And, you know, because a lot of the conversation was, and we see this with the Tigers. We're not hearing about it as much with the Pistons maybe the last couple of years with the development of Cade Cunningham, but it's the development of the core. It's the guys that you're drafting from and developing from within. This is one of them, and it does take a long time. Even though he's only 22, we're 4 years down the road.
So it's odd. I think actually think all the teams in the city are in a similar spot in this way. They all have young nucleuses. The Lions have the best young nucleus, the most proven young nucleus. But you're starting to see Cade as that engine for the Pistons. Yeah. And Yzerman's got four first-round picks now playing in the National Hockey League. And there's a couple other guys filling in that nucleus as well. The Tigers, young playoff team. They're all developing a young nucleus. And at the same time, you should support those young nucleuses. So, you know, we'll talk more about the Pistons later in the hour, but keep building around Cade. If you're Yzerman, hey, nobody disputed that you could identify great young players. Some of your free agent signings have left something to be desired.
Wanting more, yes.
Can you supplement? Hey, Scott Harris, can you supplement this young core that I'll give you credit for developing and nurturing? Can you get me Bregman? If you're Yzerman, can you add at the deadline? If you're the Pistons, can I be greedy and add at the deadline? If I'm Brad Holmes, I'm chasing a Super Bowl. You can do both. You can have a great young core and supplement them. You can add more. And I think that's what we're asking of all of our teams now.
And it leads to the excitement about what it means to be in the month of April.
You're just trying to get me to play this stupid thing.
April in my teeth.
knock out some thoughts on Lucas Raymond, Scott in New Baltimore. Are you watching this guy turn into a star?
Oh, absolutely. We've been watching him, you know, for the last couple of years since his first year coming up. Season ticket holders, and that was the talk in our section in the beginning of this year of, you know, yeah, he's getting the assists, but, you know, the goals just aren't showing up. And then all of a sudden, you know, we were actually shocked. We looked at each other on Monday, 20 goals, yep. You know, quietly over the past couple months, or the past few weeks. So, yeah, we're excited about him. And then you talk about some of the other unsung heroes. I think the guy that doesn't get enough credit possibly is Moritz Seider on the defense there. You know, there was a play on Monday. Wings were in a power play. One of the Kings was in the corner and just tried to rip the puck back across the ice. Seider was on the blue line and literally caught the puck with his stick. You know, it's coming 80 miles an hour or whatever it was coming across. And he just caught it, kept control, passed it around, and continued to play. He doesn't back down from anyone. He's a tough guy, and I think he is another one. You know, the two of them, because they started the same year together, the two yep. of them as a pair, offense and defense, we're excited about those two guys mostly.
And they just got long-term deals this offseason. They're both scratching the surface. Yeah, Seider plays tough minutes. He plays against the top team, top top lines. He plays penalty kill. And I think there's even more there offensively from Seider once they can kind of get a foundation set.
So, sure.
Yeah.
Support him a little bit more.
Yeah, of course.
And be able to accentuate what he does well.
Ticket Texter said, Todd McLellan has to get credit for putting Casper with Larkin and Raymond, too. Casper's starting to look like a future star on that line, and he's only 20. Yeah, point per game the last 10 games. Texter says, there's not an NHL All-Star game this year, guys, but he would. So no one would be an All-Star. It's the Four Nations Tournament, which Lucas is a part of with Team Sweden. Yeah.
There's something weird going on in the NBA with the whole All-Star process and the whole, you know, thing with the NHL right now, the 2 weeks, and the fact that there is no All-Star, but it's the nation's
thing. We complain that these All-Star games are flat and stale, so then the leagues try to do stuff different, and then we're like, wait, what?
Well, I'm not complaining that they're doing something different. I hope it didn't come across that way with the NBA. I think it's
an adjustment.
It's an adjustment. It's an unknown.
All right. Coming up next, we're going to play some Jerry Jones audio. He's the owner of the Dallas Cowboys. I don't think he's using this word correctly, John.
Are you sure? He very well may be using this as intended.
You guys be the judge of that. We'll talk Pistons trade deadline at 9:35. It's 97.1.
Hey, America's favorite place to watch football and all your great sporting events. When we talk about the ones coming up in April or March, it's at Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience absolutely built for sports fans. Chill in one of the six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive 40-foot tall high-definition screen. It's located at Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. And it's right there on Fremont Street. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircleLasVegas.com.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, John, you found this audio.
Yeah.
It's Jerry Jones. People have been pushing Jerry about the way he's run the Cowboys. They only won 7 games. Their head coach hire was uninspiring. They promoted from within, the OC who wasn't even calling plays. And even if you think Schottenheimer's a good guy, no other team had interviewed him. So people are kind of circling. The vultures are circling in Dallas. And you want to set this up?
Well, sure. I mean, we've heard about him trying to justify the hire of Brian Schottenheimer, and I've worked with Brian before. Brian's a great guy. And I think he will be a good head coach. Don't know if it works in Dallas or not, because not a lot has worked in Dallas since the 90s to any, you know, sustained success. But Jerry Jones's response to criticism over the hire has been less than, it doesn't build confidence. And then this is something that he had said yesterday when asked about, you know, the process and what it's like running a team.
There's a very low percentage of this that is smiles and glory holes. Very low percentage.
Now, you were in the car with your daughter?
I was in the car with my daughter, yes. She's now driving. She has her permit. She was driving to Jack's basketball game. We're listening to some country music on the radio, and I am, because I'm now sitting in the passenger seat, able to peruse social media and continue my prep for the radio show. And as I'm doing it, I click on the post. So the audio then goes, it doesn't replace the country music, but it is overlaying it, right? It's going on at the same time. So you hear the smiles and glory holes over the speakers in the truck.
I don't think Jerry knows what he's saying.
I don't. So do you think he is just, was it a quote-unquote senior moment? Or do you think he has a slew of senior moments?
I don't think he realizes what that word means in
today's
2025.
Parlance?
Yeah, it may have meant something when Jerry was growing up. And I think he's still using it. He used that phrase back in 2012.
And please give us the context of that, or at least the quote that you have.
Give me a second to pull it up here, but...
Because
here it is.
Okay.
Never mind. Keep going.
Okay. So in the context that he uses it now, and he says, you know, smiles and glory holes. So smiles is obviously, it's a good moment, right? It's happy times. And then he follows it up with what I guess one would assume would be another happy moment.
Sure. Could be.
Do you agree?
Why?
Sure.
This was the quote in 2012. I've been here when it was glory hole days, and I've been here when it wasn't. Having said that, I want me some glory hole.
Like there, I just feel like he added the word hole, just like added it on. Like, just say the glory days. Like, I've been there during the glory days.
The good times.
Yeah, the good times. You don't need to throw in the...
He's using it as though it's a synonym for good times.
Right.
And I'm not telling you to Google this on a work computer, but that is not the way people use that.
No.
No. In today's day and age, and I mean, if you know, Urban Dictionary will tell you all you need to know. I did Google it. And the...
Of course they need to Google it.
No, they don't. No. But I did anyway. And the first definition that comes up, and like I would never use this in regards to how the first, it's a noun, and it's an untidy storage place, especially a room or cupboard.
So you could go home and use this and see how it goes over. Honey, look at this glory hole. Like, and see what she...
Why didn't you clean this up?
Yeah. This place is a mess.
Now, some people have said this is used, like, with oil. Like, if you found the spot with the oil, you drilled and you found... Be careful with drill. You find a spot, and that's where the oil is. That's Texas parlance for a glory hole. But, Jerry, that's not how people are hearing it when you say it. Jay in Bloomfield, you have some thoughts here on 97.1.
Hey, how you doing, guys? Good morning.
Good.
I can't believe I'm like trying to pick apart what Jerry Jones is saying these days, but I think he, you know, maybe he was like trying to take a rip of like the world's not all sunshines and rainbows. It's not all sunshine, smiles, and honey holes. Honey holes is like a term for like a good fishing spot, and you don't let people around your honey hole. That's the only explanation I have.
Yeah. I mean, too many and it gets a little sticky. But yeah, I don't necessarily know. I mean, he obviously has used this before, and it just, I would love to follow Jerry Jones around for a couple of days just to see what his world is like and the different things, conversations that he has. if this is what he says to the public, I want to know what he says when the microphone is not on. It's got to be unbelievably entertaining.
There's a very low percentage of this that is smiles and glory holes. Very low percentage.
Interesting that he used smiles first.
Because?
Well, I mean, I would think the smile would come after.
Let's get to Heather with the news. Sorry, Heather.
There's a whole slew of articles about him using this term, and he's used it before, not only in 2012 and just now. He's used it at other times as well. Oh, the articles are hilarious. Like, the headlines are really
funny. Well, just a headline.
Well, Jerry Jones brings back cringeworthy term to describe, you know, like, it just everywhere. Yeah. They're, and like, the memes are really funny. Anyway, holy cow. Okay.
Yeah.
In other news. The Super Bowl is less than 2 weeks away. And according to a new survey, 75% of Americans do plan to watch. But this year, fans plan to spend less money than in years past. So, I mean, that could be money on food, money on merchandise, on sports betting. For those planning to watch, the average person is going to spend $142, which sounds like a lot of money to me.
For, wait.
It could be for food, like a Super Bowl party, or just wherever you're going to watch. Food, shirts, merchandise, sports betting.
That's where it'll add up.
That's total on
the
just the Super Bowl?
The average person will spend $142 on the Super Bowl this year.
What's odd is that it dwarfs, like, if you think about Thanksgiving, and we always talk about the price of a meal for Thanksgiving. Like, it dwarfs the price of a meal at Thanksgiving, which just to me doesn't seem logical.
Maybe this is the new Thanksgiving. We give thanks for the final football game of the season.
It's the betting. It's
only
be
if you're watching it.
41% do plan to place bets on the game, and that could be anywhere, like on a professional sports website, or it could be like with family members, with buddies.
Squares,
yes.
All of that.
And then there's some info about Taylor Swift, because we've had a lot of people share their hatred for Taylor Swift, and nearly a quarter of Americans say that she has impacted them either for better or worse. 14% say they have a greater interest in the NFL because of Taylor Swift. So there's some positivity, but 10% say they've lost interest because of her. And 17% say they hate what she has done to the league.
What has she done to the league? Please define what she's done to the league, or how has she negatively impacted your life? Like, I don't understand.
Just read the numbers. Gen Zers, though, 39% of them say that she has impacted how much they spend on football.
Well, and so the NFL is trying to figure out how to tap into the next generation.
Yeah.
And it's Gen Z is what, the next one?
John, she's rigging all these games. That's what she's doing. She's rigging these
games. I think it's just another peek into how Gen Zers have no money.
Got that Lauer button.
Oh, yes.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Ugh. Oh, my gosh. If you're a fan of SNL's Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, you have a chance to see them in person at the Fox Theater. So they're going to be in Detroit on April 4th as part of their Restless Leg tour, a comedy tour. Tickets go on sale Friday, 10 a.m. on Ticketmaster. Could be a good show.
Yeah.
I like both of them.
Yeah,
and I think them
she's
together.
Tina Fey, I say she. Yeah. There's both of them are she. I think she is hilarious.
Yeah, I think they're both really funny. So I got to share this story again. This is such a wild freak accident that took place during a track and field meet in Colorado. There was a dad who went to go watch his son compete in an event sitting in the bleachers.
This is bizarre.
And he was killed by a competitor. So this man, 57 years old, Wade Langston, he was there and just sitting there when all of a sudden a competitor in the hammer throw event, something happened. They released, it's not a hammer, it's this weight on, you know,
on a chain.
On a chain. Yep. Released it and it went flying over the netting, the safety net. And this guy moved to protect his wife and child and it hit him, basically killed him
on the
instantly.
Spot.
Wild, right? Witnesses say that he was just there trying to protect his son and his kid, and everyone is like heartbroken and shocked over this, right? It's just a freak accident. What's it called? Twitter might have been blowing up recently because Jim Acosta has signed off on CNN for the final time. On Tuesday, he announced that he would not be returning to CNN after 18 years with the network.
You may have seen some reports about me and the show. And after giving all of this some careful consideration and weighing an alternative time slot CNN offered me, I've decided to move on. I am grateful to CNN for the nearly 18 years I've spent here doing the news. I want to thank all of you for tuning in. It has been an honor to be welcomed into your home for all these years. That's the news.
Did you hear about that one?
I did, because people messaged me.
I'm
things
sure
like,
they did.
It's not even been a year. Where are you going?
Yeah, not quite that. Thank you for your journalistic integrity. I didn't do anything.
It's not me.
I will not give into lies or fear. Why are you sending this to me?
Because it's hilarious. It's I'm going to have to get
so
in on that.
Close.
Yeah.
And that is Heather with the news. Coming up next, we are a week away, 8 days away from the NBA trade deadline. The Pistons are considered one of the five most fascinating teams. Mm-hmm. Buy, sell, hold. What Malik Beasley said and what we want to see them do. It's 97.1.
Hey, your New Year's resolution is to lose weight, and you can get there faster than you think with Ideal You. Go to idealyou.us now, and you could lose 20 to 30 pounds in just 40 days. Whether your resolution is to lose 10, 100, or anywhere in between, Ideal You works, and it works fast. We all love to see progress, and you get the chance to see it quickly because I lost 10 in the first 10 days. I lost 50 pounds in those first 40 days, and it's because I got to eat real whole food, so it was something that I could stick with. It's not shakes or bars. Ideal You's weight loss coaches are going to work with you every step of the way. Your coach is going to help you lose weight, and they're also going to help you keep it off. If you want to weigh less, go to idealyou.us. Ideal You is a Michigan-based weight loss company that's helped thousands of people just like me and you lose weight. In fact, over 90% of Ideal You customers lose at least 20 pounds in just 40 days. That is a great statistic. 9 out of 10 find that success. If you want to weigh less, go to idealyou.us. Sign up now. You're also going to get a $200 Visa gift card. Start your new year off right, lose weight, and get that $200 Visa gift card. Want to weigh less? Go to idealyou.us. The Pistons have certainly become an interesting story in the NBA. And here in Detroit, having come off an historically bad season, 14 wins, now to where they are sitting in a play-in spot at 500, 23-23, they have some interesting decisions to have to make in about 8 days at the trade deadline.
I think they flipped the conversation on its head. When they signed Tim Hardaway Jr. and Malik Beasley and Tobias Harris, the thought was, yeah, they'll probably be traded at the deadline. The Pistons won't be in much of a race. They're in the 8 seed right now. And they're going to be in the thick of this to make the playoffs. Are you buying now? Has it changed? Or is it simply you're just going to hold? And I think Malik Beasley's at the center of this because he's an attractive piece. He's on an expiring contract. He's one of the best three-point shooters in the NBA right now. Volume and percentage. What do you do? Are you buying? Are you selling? Are you holding? Which camp are you in?
I would like to see them buy, but buy with caution. Not mortgage anything of the future. By that, I mean anything 3 or more years down the road. You could have a guy come in here with, you know, a year or two on their contract, see what he can do, see how much he can add. But I'm not going to go out there and try and get the final piece to the puzzle that sends you over the top because they're just not in that spot.
I also don't think they can. They owe their first round pick to another team.
Right.
So until they give that pick up, likely at the end of this season, they're stuck in terms of how much they can buy. But they have this cornucopia of second round picks and they've got some expirings and they could do a small buy. Right, they could try to find a guy. I think CJ McCollum is an interesting name out there on a bad team, on a two-year deal. He's expensive. They might just want to be done with it. He would be that secondary ball handler to help Cade. They've really missed Ivy. He can shoot. McCollum makes a lot of sense. And I do think you keep Beasley because, you know, Malik has said they've had open conversations, him and Trajan Langdon. And then if a contender comes in with a great offer, everybody understands it's business.
Business is business.
But what is a great offer? If I'm a contender, I'm going to offer you pick 28, a late first. I'm keeping Malik Beasley because to me, I'm investing in Cade.
Right.
I'm investing in moving this team forward. I want to re-sign Malik Beasley.
Well, and it's interesting too because you mentioned the conversation surrounding the Pistons and leading into the trade deadline. If even just like a couple months ago, it was going to be, yeah, the Pistons would be a part of the trade deadline, but they would be that silent partner in a three-team trade.
Facilitating.
Right. Now, I think they're going to be a part of the trade deadline, not as the cast-off, but as are they going to add, or even if they just simply hold and they don't sell Malik Beasley. To me, that is, he's already on the team, so you can't define it as buying, but to me, that's buying the near future with the possibility to extend that future with Malik Beasley.
Okay, I don't know how viable this is, but people put out fake trades all the time, sure, especially when we get close to the deadline, and people tweet them out, and I see them on social media. Detroit Bad Boys is a SB Nation site. They write about the Pistons. They put out a bunch of trades. One stuck out to me. CJ McCollum for Tim Hardaway Jr., who's expiring, and Simone Fontecchio, who has this year and next year, plus a second. You can make it 2 seconds. You can make it 3 seconds. But for the argument for the Pelicans is they're not winning anything. They get rid of McCollum. They free up some cap space. The argument for Detroit is they get better.
Right.
And to the point of, are they NBA title contenders? No. But are they a team that can win a couple playoff games? Are they a team that could push this franchise forward, secure a playoff spot, maybe not have to be in the play-in? I think all of this is what you should be doing. When you start to turn the corner, you invest in your young players, you put veterans around them, and you try to win.
Yeah, and in terms of throwing in an extra second or, you stockpile second-round picks, and you're like, what's the value in that? Yeah, there seems to be very little value unless you're trying to, populate your G League team.
Right. Or to use them in deals like this. I mean, they're just kind of like loose change that you can round up for charity type of thing. Yeah. Try to put a deal over the top.
It comes along with that lint that's stuck in your pocket.
No kidding. So where are you guys at? Like, this was a team that we didn't think was going to be in this position. And Langdon, I think, has even acknowledged that they're further along. So he went from one philosophy, and he may be considering another.
Well, the beautiful thing is he's not anchored to one philosophy. Nope. He can shift gears and go from, that silent third party and taking on expiring contracts to active participant in trying to get better. And it's not just there could be an opportunity, and you brought up a couple, where you don't just take it as an opportunity to get better this year, but you could still add in the offseason, and whatever you decide that you want to add at the trade deadline could be a part of the equation moving forward next year.
Makes sense to me. I know the Pistons have lost a couple in a row. They got the Pacers tonight. I know those have been tough games. Pacers are better. They may lose. It's not going to discourage me from trying to invest in Cade Cunningham. And that's not just the salary you pay Cade. It's the players you put around Cade. And I think that's been
at this point, pretty obvious. At this point, it's not about the salary you're paying him because that's
already done.
That's a sunk cost. I don't want to say it's sunk cost. That's money spent.
Yeah.
It's how do you invest in making him better?
Well, and I think some of it was J.B. Bickerstaff. And some of it is Malik Beasley and Tobias Harris. And some of it may be a move they make in the next 8 days here. I think to get a true running mate for him is probably an off-season exercise for a couple reasons. One, you can't trade your first-round pick this year until you either know you have it or you've given it up. And I think Lauri Markkanen is a name on another bad team that would interest Pistons fans. Front court, shooter, budding star. He can't be traded until after the trade deadline. He can't be traded until the offseason. So there's a world where the Pistons make the playoffs, flame out in the first round, but have an idea of what they're working with. And then they can trade a couple first to get a true running mate for Cade Cunningham.
And don't underestimate the value. We saw that what the value is. Well, it's you got to learn from your experiences. Mm-hmm. And it's, what type of value did the Wings and their young players learn from last year and just missing out, mm-hmm. and how valuable every single point is. It's the same thing with the Pistons. What's the value if they are able to get into that play-in tournament or be one of the top six teams and secure a playoff spot? I don't know that you could put a value on what that experience is for those young players.
Yeah, when the Red Wings had that streak going, just getting in was delaying the inevitable.
Yeah, continuing a streak that
was matter. Yeah. But now it's different. Like, just getting in is not just getting in. It's the start of a new run. If you're going to try to find a running mate for Cade, don't you want to be attractive? Don't you want to look like you got your poop in a group, that you know what you're doing? Yeah, you do.
I haven't heard that one in a while.
And I
think you want to be attractive.
Yes.
Yes. And then pair that with your poop in a group.
Yeah, as opposed to getting your ass together. 248-539-9797. We want to know where you're at on the Pistons. It's been one of those deals where the calendar shifts. You know, Lions are still a huge part of what we do, but we've got teams that matter now. Like normally at this point in the season, we'd be going, hey, the Pistons ever going to win a basketball game? And instead, they've won just as many as they lost. They're very much a conversation going into the trade deadline.
How much of that is sustainable, the way that they are assembled right now?
Yeah, I mean, you worry about losing Jaden Ivey, right? You worry about what that means against the better teams they play. Like, it's been an issue the last couple nights, and it'll probably be an issue tonight. Can you get them that extra piece to help? Yeah, I don't know how sustainable this is. I think right now my expectation is they'll be in the play-in, somewhere between 7, 8, 9, and 10.
And it's what are the other teams going to be doing around them as well that are grouped in with them? We know that there's a lot going on with the Miami Heat. And are
the
they
stuff?
Yeah, the Jimmy Butler stuff. And not that the Pistons would be a landing spot for Jimmy Butler, but I mean, they're one of those teams right now. They're in the sixth spot. They are one less loss away from being where the Pistons are. If they drop off because they unload Jimmy Butler, now all of a sudden, hey, you instantly get a little bit better by default in regards to the prospects of making the playoffs. Orlando Magic, they've got some injuries. The Atlanta Hawks, you've already talked about, you know, we saw a head-to-head competition against them. Like, this is a team that can contend, and not only can they contend for the play-in, they can contend for an actual playoff spot.
Texter says, I'm in favor of Lonzo Ball. He's an expiring contract, could be that secondary facilitator, could come cheap. Texter says, another vote for Lonzo Ball. If Beasley can get you an unprotected first, it would be hard to turn down. See, I disagree. If it's unprotected from a contender, it's probably not going to be worth very much. And then the Texter says, Miles Bridges will be a Piston after the deadline. People keep pushing that. I don't see it. Reminder, you can download the Odyssey app and listen to 97.1 The Ticket on the app for the chance at the ultimate trip to Vegas. Just be listening on the Odyssey app. Coming up next, we'll pass the baton to Doug Karsh. I was talking to him out in the bullpen about this Michigan story. We addressed it earlier. We'll get back into that next. It's 97.1.
Hey, the FanDuel Kick of Destiny, it's back. And this time, it's every Manning for himself. This Super Bowl, two legends are going to take the field in sudden death field goal showdown. It's Peyton versus Eli, live from New Orleans. One kick to claim the ultimate family bragging rights. Who will rise to the moment? Pick your winner now in the FanDuel app. And if you back the right brother, you're going to earn a share of $10 million in bonus bets. It's the FanDuel Kick of Destiny 3. Make your free pick, and don't forget to tune in to watch the showdown live during the Super Bowl, during the Super Bowl 59 pregame show on Fox at 3 o'clock Eastern. May the best Manning win. Download the app or head to FanDuel.com/971Detroit and bet with FanDuel. That's FanDuel.com/971Detroit. FanDuel, official partner of Super Bowl 59. Must be 21 or over and present in Michigan. No purchase is necessary. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. Void where prohibited. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
All right, we talked about this earlier in the show, but do want to wrap with it. Everyone wants to know, what does John think with the update on the Stallion story? Yahoo Sports' Ross Dellinger has an update. Michigan will be fighting the allegations made by the NCAA, a 137-page document where Michigan says they will not enter into a negotiated resolution with the NCAA over the alleged wrongdoing. And in reading through what Yahoo says, John, to me, it appears to be a fight over level ones versus level twos. Michigan's not denying that some stuff happened.
Right.
The NCAA has said, we got you for six level ones. Michigan's going, well, hold on. Can you prove some of this? We're going to fight you on some of this. What did you make of it?
To me, it's an argument over, you know, we're not just going to accept or negotiate level ones. We think these are level twos. And, I mean, there's precedent before of other schools doing this. The latest one was Tennessee, where they went through a lengthy battle, comes out it was fines, scholarships, and recruiting limitations.
Reductions.
But it wasn't a postseason ban. If you get a level one, then you're starting to talk about postseason, not being able to play in the postseason. And so I think this is not an argument over did something go wrong. It's the level at which they believe it went wrong.
My take on it is it's kind of baffling to me. The gall of Michigan. Failure to monitor is pretty obvious here.
The gall.
Failure to monitor feels accurate, given that multiple coaches were aware of Stallion's transgressions, Hart and Partridge by name, yet compliance is not involved. Yet he stayed on staff. He was trying to navigate his student assistants to break rules, and Partridge is like, hey, you're not going to use my guy for that. Yet nobody funneled this up the chain of command. And then the head coach is a stubborn, defiant person, Jim Harbaugh, who didn't cooperate to begin with. It's like, well, guys, you were failing to monitor. You were looking the other way. You didn't want to know the scope. So, yeah, sure, we can't pin it on any of the coaches for knowing, because you guys all operated with your fingers in your ears. So to me, that is failure to monitor. It's why we talk about program issues. It's why level ones come up. You can't go, well, we didn't know. You didn't know because you didn't want to know.
You think you should have just accept it versus fight it like Tennessee? Why is it different?
I don't know that Tennessee should have fought it. I wasn't doing radio in Tennessee at the time.
But the results are they didn't have a postseason ban. So how can you argue the results? Like, you just sit there and say, okay, well, yeah, we know, which they've already admitted, John, things went wrong.
It's called accountability.
Why not fight it?
It's called accountability. We don't have enough of it anymore. It's called accountability. You screwed up. You own it. You move on. You take your penalty and you move on.
Yeah, but why accept the worst of the penalties when you might be able to fight it and get a less penalty? That makes no sense to me.
Don't do the NCAA's job for them.
Right. Yeah.
I understand nobody likes the NCAA.
The NCAA is losing on every front right now.
But they exist to govern the sport. Do they? I'm not telling you they do a good job. They exist to govern the sport.
Hmm.
And when you're in the crosshairs because you don't comply, because you don't monitor, because you look the other way, because you allow cheating in some form inside your organization, yeah, this is an issue. And as much as Michigan would like to As much as Michigan would like to paint it as one guy doing this, clearly it's more than that. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, sir. May I have another? That's exactly what you're thinking. Instead of, well, let's fight this and let's see if we can prevent some of these penalties.
Michigan's been, I would say, defiant throughout this entire thing.
No argument.
And the argument of it's not that bad, I guess that's all they have left.
Then prove it.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not, like Greg said, why would you look at North Carolina, what they went through? Did they end up having any postseason or anything that was detrimental to the program in regards to the penalties? No, they fought it. Every time that a school fights it, they end up with a better solution than if they just accept the penalty.
248-539-9797. You guys got thoughts on it? We got a couple minutes here. I think Doug plans to talk about it a little bit during their show today. I know there's a lot going on, but this, I also say, and I share it with these guys, it's the story I'm least interested to talk about at this point. I just know, Hey, it's a headline and we need to get into it today a little bit. And I think these guys probably feel the same way in the next show.
It's nauseating, but it's not going away. And part of why it's not going away is that Michigan's going to fight it.
They have every right to.
Sure.
It's just, does it look good when you fight it?
Does it matter what it looks like
at this
point?
Well, a lot of this is about your reputation. Isn't 99% of the story at this point about your reputation?
What are they saving? The reputation has
forever been tarnished.
Yeah. And which then leads me to my question that I had earlier is, why are there factions of the Michigan fan base that continue to celebrate Connor Stallions? And I just, when someone does something to a program and they bring shame or they bring, you know, all of this black cloud over a program, why is it that individual is celebrated? It makes no sense to me. It angers me every time I hear his name. Or I see his, you know, like if you're just watching the TV and all of a sudden his face comes on, there's instant anger because of what he's done to the program. And it doesn't just stop with him.
Yeah,
trust me.
Yeah. I mean, there's other people who I'm sure you don't feel happy with either, but he is ultimately the epicenter.
He's the face of it. Yeah.
Yeah, the face of this. You know what it is? I think there's some Michigan fans that like that this has become a troll thing. Like, that's why they rally around him, to like troll other people. And I don't understand, because he didn't. A lot of Michigan fans claim he didn't have to do this. So then why are you making him out to be some hero that guided Michigan back to national prominence? If you didn't need him, all he did was put a roadblock in your way. All he did was invoke asterisk talk and stupid stuff that rivals get to attack you with for the rest of your life. There's no world where this guy should be paraded around on tailgates on game day, yet he is.
He took away, and I, you know what, whatever happens to the coaches, like, they're adults, all right? They made their own choices. But he took away from what the athletes did on the field, what they were actively doing, and that's really what angers me.